Weaving the threads of art, culture, and history, Chris Chambers creates an aural tapestry.
When I first saw the film Cabaret, I was utterly spellbound. The stunning choreography in a seedy Berlin nightclub, the evocative music, the sexual interplay, and of course the Nazis lurking intimidatingly in the background. Amazingly, it's now 30 years since Cabaret was first released. It's 70 years since Christopher Isherwood wrote Goodbye to Berlin, the book that inspired it. But have our ideas of what Berlin Cabaret was like in the 1920s and 30s been wrongly shaped by the great creative power of the film and the book? What's myth and what's the reality? That's what I want to find out, and I'm helped by Peter Jelovich, professor of German history at Johns Hopkins University and author of Berlin Cabaret, and Keith Garibian, the author of The Making of Cabaret.
The film starts off with that brilliant first number, Willkommen. It seems to be an innocent greeting by the conférencier or the MC.
Willkommen, bienvenue, welcome.
He's casting a spell.
Fremde, étranger, stranger.
He comes on with his very highly pomaded hair, a lot of rouge on his cheeks, with lipstick and mascara. He seemed to be unreal. He typifies this interplay of reality and unreality and the extent to which a whole society could become captive to a hallucination.
Meine Damen und Herren, Mesdames et Messieurs, Ladies und Gentlemen, comment ça va? Do you feel good? Ich bin euer conférencier. I am your host.
It's not going to be just your ordinary musical. It's going to be much more than that.
Im cabaret, au cabaret, au cabaret.
Leave your troubles outside. So, life is disappointing. Forget it. In here.
What good is sitting alone in your room? Come hear the music play. Life is a cabaret, old chum. Come to the cabaret. Put down the knitting.
The movie Cabaret, despite its title, has actually very little to do with the political and social cabarets, which the Germans now call cabaret. What you see is more like a second or third rate variety show or burlesque show. And there certainly were many of those in Berlin in the 1920s.
Come blow your horn, start celebrating. Right this way, your table's waiting.
You would have a lot of underdressed women on stage. They would be singing bawdy songs. They would rarely sing political songs. If they did sing political songs, the songs would tend to be right wing.
So come to the cabaret.
Because most of these downscale variety shows and strip joints catered to a generally middle-class public, which was interested mainly in sex and had right-wing political dispositions. And so the political agenda would be nationalist. It would make fun of the Republic precisely because the Republic was a democracy. And it would show a lot of flesh.
Life is a cabaret, old chum. Come to the cabaret.
What one sees on the stage of the Kit Kat Club in the musical is not inaccurate, but it's very different from the tradition of more leftist or liberal and more artistic and literary cabarets.
And
well, Well, this is where it all began. I'm standing outside number 17 Nolendorfstraat in the Berlin district of Schöneberg. And attached to the wall is a large bronze plaque inscribed with the words, "Here from March 1929 to January 1933 lived the English writer Christopher Isherwood. His novels, Goodbye to Berlin and Mr. Norris Changes Trains, are based on his experiences here. They were the inspiration for the film Cabaret." So it's here that Isherwood wrote those famous lines, "I am a camera with its shutter open," quite passive, recording.
I am a camera with its shutter open, quite passive, recording, not thinking. Recording the man shaving at the window opposite, and the woman in the kimono washing her hair. Someday, all this will have to be developed, carefully printed, fixed.
One element one has also in Cabaret is a portrayal of a lot of homosexuals and lesbians. There certainly was a very flourishing homosexual and lesbian culture in Berlin. And that's the main reason why Christopher Isherwood actually went to Berlin. He's very open about this. He says that the reason why he and some of the other young British men went to Berlin was, as he put it, for the boys. But it tended to be segregated. It was mainly to be found in a few square blocks to the south of the Nollendorfplatz in Berlin. This sort of free-flowing integration of homosexuals and heterosexuals in the entertainment sphere that you see in the musical Cabaret, that, as far as I can tell, really did not take place. These were separate spheres. Most of the middle-class public went to cabarets and entertainment venues where the skits were very predominantly heterosexual. You would occasionally have homosexual numbers on stage. One of the very famous ones was a song sung by Margot Lyon and Marlene Dietrich. It was called "Wenn die beste Freundin."
Wenn die beste Freundin mit der besten Freundin, um Patent zu kaufen, um Patent zu kaufen und sich auszulaufen.
And the situation is that two married women are out on a shopping spree, and they sing about their friendship, but the more they sing about it, the more we realize that actually they have a very intimate association as well and can't stand their husbands.
Oh, meine schöne Freundin, oh, meine treue Freundin, oh, meine süße Freundin, ist die beste Freundin.
It's a very funny song, but it became an unofficial anthem of the German lesbian movement towards the end of the 1920s. Now, what one sees in the audience that's portrayed in the musical Cabaret, I frankly have quite a bit of trouble placing it historically. There is a myth about Weimar Germany, which was a myth created in the time of a decadent society. Now, I don't like using the word decadent because it was the word used by the Nazis to attack Weimar culture. Ironically, and this is very ironic and paradoxical, if you read Isherwood's works, you also have an image of Berlin as being predominantly dominated by a gay subculture. But that's simply because Isherwood was most interested in that. Very paradoxically, the only other people who will describe Berlin culture in that way are the Nazis, for the absolute opposite reasons. Because what the Nazis wanted to do, of course, was to defame the Weimar Republic and Berlin culture in particular as much as possible among their conservative and right-wing voter base.
Last night, Fritz Wendel proposed a tour of the dives. Salome turned out to be very expensive and even more depressing than I had imagined. A few stage lesbians and some young men with plucked eyebrows lounged at the bar, uttering occasional raucous guffaws or treble hoots, supposed, apparently, to represent the laughter of the damned. We went out halfway through the cabaret performance, after a young man in a spangled crinoline and jewelled breast caps had painfully but successfully executed three splits.
probably the most successful cabaret in Berlin at the end of the 20s and the early 30s was the so-called Cabaret der Komiker, the Kadiko. And it was a very interesting mixture of short one-act plays, comic sketches, and also political commentary, which was made exclusively by the conferencier, a person named Paul Nikolaus.
Liebe Anwesende, mein Name ist Paul Nikolaus.
Most of the numbers, whether songs or skits, were simply entertaining, humorous pieces.
Frau Abendstern, Frau Abendstern, ist heute wieder ganz modern, denn man trägt jetzt wieder dick, und da ist sie plötzlich schick.
Politics was solely in the hands of the conferencier, who would make political jokes about the events of the day. Other cabarets had conferenciers, sometimes, usually did not. What held a show together in the better cabarets was the fact that they were scripted by the same person or a small group of people.
Money. Money makes the world go around, the world go around, the world go around. Money makes the world go around, it makes the world go round.
Candor and Ebb, the composers for the musical, tried to get a flavor of German music in that period. The problem was they didn't really have translations of the lyrics that existed in German cabaret. So what exactly was being sung or spoken in cabaret was sort of foreign to them. So they had to play it by ear, as it were, and they went along with a mixture of American jazz and what they thought would be a reflection of German cabaret music. There's a lot of Las Vegas sound and touches as well.
Money makes us go around the sand, we both are sure on being poor.
The Money Song, I think, is a sort of a generalized comment on socioeconomic reality of the time, but I think it also is a song of characterization, certainly as far as the MC is concerned, because he typifies or signifies this kind of amoral indifference to other people's misfortune. The song rubs people's noses into it, and I think the MC himself is doing that, which simply fortifies the sense he projects to the audience of a kind of demonic influence and a demonic reflection of the dark side of German society.
Money, 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 money.
In the afternoon, it was very hot. The details of the new emergency decrees were in the early evening papers, terse, governmentally inspired. One alarmist headline stood out boldly, barred with blood-red ink. Everything collapses, collapses, collapses.
Germany, and Berlin in particular, has had some very bad history in the 20th century. Obviously, World War I itself and the loss of that war hurt Germans very badly. There was real famine in the winter of 1917-1918. At the end of the war, there was not only high unemployment, but a ravaging hyperinflation which lasted into the fall of 1923. Everyone's savings, if they had savings, were wiped out. So conditions were very grim in the early years of the Weimar Republic. The revues, and to a certain extent the cabaret stages, sought to address the situation critically, but also to give some hope, some inspiration to their audience. And one of the most famous songs in that mode, the sort of optimistic mode, was the Linden March. And the text reads, Solang noch unter den Linden die alten Bäume blühen, kann uns nicht überwinden, Berlin, du bleibst Berlin.
Solang noch unter den Linden die alten Bäume blühen, kann nichts uns überwinden, Berlin bleibt doch Berlin. Wenn keiner.
What those lines say is that as long as the linden trees continue to bloom unter den Linden along Berlin's major thoroughfare, then nothing can overcome us, nothing can defeat us. Berlin, you're still Berlin. Berlin, du bleibst Berlin. That was an attempt to give hope to Germans in 1923. It was sung again after 1945 by people like Marlene Dietrich, because they too wanted to give some hope to Germans and Berliners after the ravages of World War II.